Hello, you're listening to Romeo And, a podcast about masculinity, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today. I'm your host, Street Saint. A lot of you have probably heard of the online game called League of Legends. It's a game that has broken a lot of ground in the competitive gaming community, but it's also broken a lot of ground in terms of how games depict their female characters. League of Legends has been judged to be one of the most played video games in the world for about 2 years running now. The game has almost single-handedly legitimized the entire competitive gaming scene. The League of Legends World Championship Tournament, known as Worlds by the community, drew an audience of about 27 million viewers in 2014. And to give some context, the so-called World Series for baseball in the United States had an average of just 16 million views in that same year. No video game has ever turned out these kinds of numbers for a tournament before. Now, I'm a League of Legends fanboy myself, but I'm not here to talk about how great the game is. Well, in a way I am, but not in the conventional sense. I give you these numbers to let you know how popular the game has become and how vast its audience is. League of Legends is a strategy-based MOBA, which stands for Multiplayer Online Battle Arena. In the game, players can choose from over 100 different playable characters, called champions. Each champion has an arsenal of different abilities that it can use to defeat their opponents. Some champions are tanks, who can soak up a lot of damage. Other champions are marksmen, who can do a lot of damage from afar. And some are powerful mages who can just blow up enemies at will. And each champion has a completely different set of skills, which makes the game really interesting and different every time you play it. The company behind League of Legends is Riot Games, and every so often they release a new playable champion, which always gets the community super hyped. Once a new champion is released, everyone wants to see what it is and what it's like in the game and how strong or overpowered it is. At the time I'm recording this episode, the most recent champion to have been released by Riot Games is the void creature known as Rek'Sai, who sounds like this. Each champion in League of Legends has a background or lore, which describes who they are and where they come from. Rek'Sai is from the Void, which is basically a type of netherworld in the League of Legends universe. All of the Void creatures in the game look twisted and demonic and somewhat insectile. Besides Rek'Sai, there are four other Void creatures in League of Legends. All of them are male. Rek'Sai, however, is the queen of the Xer'Sai species. In the references portion of this episode's show notes, you can find a link to an image of Rek'Sai. The only way I can really describe her is that she's this fierce, scary-looking beast. Work. Rek'Sai is the kind of thing that might chase you in your nightmares. Basically, to sum her up. More importantly, Rek'Sai has no noticeable sexual genitalia. Of course, we have no male version of her species to compare her to, but regardless, looking at a picture of Rek'Sai, there's no clear way to tell whether she's male or female. In other words, Riot just picked a gender to attach to Rek'Sai. Now, this might not seem like a big deal, but it's actually a pretty big fucking deal. Sure, Riot could have just flipped a coin and said, this one's gonna be a girl. But they didn't. Because if the gaming community were to pick a gender for this beast, it would most definitively be male. I know this because even after Riot announced that Rek'Sai is female, people still continue to refer to her as male. Now, Riot has recently undergone a big change in its company in regards to gender depictions. When League of Legends was first released in 2009, all of the female characters were predictably sexualized. Their quote-unquote armor is revealing. They have long hair, big boobs, small waists. Just like pretty much any video game, all of the women have the same character model, just with different outfits and weapons. You know, Ashe, Morgana, Sivir, Soraka, Evelynn, Janna, Katarina. Almost all of these original champions have interchangeable bodies. There are a few exceptions, like Kayle, for example, who does wear a full-on medieval-looking suit of armor, but she still has this ponytail that sticks out from the back of her helmet, or from the top of her helmet. And not to mention she has this impossibly slender waist, you know, just to make perfectly clear that she's actually a woman. All of the original female characters, even if they aren't overtly sexualized, have very clear feminine characteristics to make it obvious what gender they are. The one exception is maybe Anivia, the Cryo Phoenix, who's basically this giant ice bird. But her name is Anivia, which is fairly feminine. She also has a female voice actress, and in the game, she jokes about how difficult it is to lay an egg. So, there's that. But over the years, Riot has systematically begun to change their character design techniques. They've now updated a lot of the original female characters' artwork, so they're less like supermodels who somehow stumbled onto a battlefield. Most notably is Sejuani, who is a warrior from the icy tundra known as the Freljord. For a warrior who generally fights in freezing cold temperatures, a lot of players found it odd that Sejuani was literally dressed in a bikini. In 2013, Riot updated Sejuani's character model, so now she's appropriately dressed for the cold. Thanks, Riot. Although it's not as if the cold ever really bothered me anyway. Yeah, I went there. The most recent female characters in League of Legends include Vi, Jinx, Lissandra, and Kalista, all of whom have unique body types and identities. Rek'Sai is the icing on this gender-progressive cake. From her look, to her voice, to her name, she has not a single gender-defining trait. Rek'Sai shares an apostrophized name, like the other void creatures, Cho'Gath, Kha'Zix, Kog'Maw, and Vel'Koz. None of these names have any particular meaning in any language, so we have no idea what gender identifiers exist, if any. Additionally, Rek'Sai doesn't speak a traditional language, which is another first for the game. She speaks in a series of feral snarls, growls, and roars, which vary from low grunts to high-pitched screeches. All of the other void creatures speak with English dialogue, though their voices often are edited to sound more monstrous. As an example, here's a quote from another creature from the void, Cho'Gath.
"You have stains upon your soul! Perfect!"
When Rek'Sai first came out, Riot made it a point to let everyone know that she was female. They used female pronouns and other identifiers like Queen of the Xer'Sai. One of her abilities is actually named Queen's Wrath. Nevertheless, without any clear female signifiers, besides those, the first instinct gamers had was to identify her as male. When I first heard about Rek'Sai, I couldn't wait to read up on all of her abilities, as I do with all the new champions. And when I saw that they had made her female, I was ecstatic. I remember talking to a friend about Rek'Sai when she was first announced, and he asked me if I knew what roles he would be good at, and if I knew how strong he would be. And I said that she looks like a really strong jungler, and I couldn't wait to try her. I made sure nobody got away with calling Rek'Sai a man. And a lot of gamers might say, what's the difference? You said yourself that Rek'Sai could be either gender. What does it matter if we call her a he or a she? The truth is, it shouldn't matter. But as I said before, it does matter. It matters because we're so used to assuming male first. We see a scary-looking creature like Rek'Sai with androgynous characteristics, and we immediately say that it's a he. No one would have assumed Rek'Sai is female because she wasn't drawn with a pink bow on her head. By forcing people to accept that this visually genderless creature is female, Riot has taken the gaming community a step forward. And it's progressive steps like these which make me really proud to be a member of the League community. We obviously still have a long way to go, but I'm glad Riot is making some steps and they're not passively conforming to the standards of gender like most other video game companies. But with that, let's get back to this episode of Romeo and. And this episode is going to be a little bit different from the last ones. When I came up with the idea for this podcast, I had one major goal in mind, and that was to raise awareness about the way men are held back in our society. Right away, I knew I was going to face a major issue. Namely, how are feminists going to react to this? I myself am a feminist, so I know that I knew that I had to be careful approaching the subject, because the ways in which men are discriminated against has become something of a hot and especially volatile topic lately. Feminists might argue, why do we need to talk about how men are mistreated by our society? Men are the most powerful majority. They hold and have held most of the top positions in government, business, and just about everything else. How could they possibly be negatively affected by a society in which they are the leaders? And even if society does hold them back, who cares? If anything, they need to be kicked down a notch, right? These are all really good points. However, it's not only a good idea, but it's of the utmost importance to consider the male perspective on gender inequality. Ignoring the male side of the story, as we largely have for years, has contributed to a lot of problems that I think could be rectified fairly easily. And so I decided to dedicate this episode to doing just that, going over just why it's important to look at how men are targeted by society in negative ways. More specifically, I'm going to talk about the feminist arguments against the so-called men's rights movement, what my stance is on these arguments, and lastly, what the potential benefits are of talking about men's issues and how doing so can benefit feminism as well. The primary focus of this podcast will be on narratives, men's stories in real life, and as well as how they're portrayed in the media. However, I thought it was important to take some time in an earlier episode to just go over why I started the podcast in the first place. I think doing so will give more context for future episodes, as well as give you all a better idea in general about where I'm coming from. And with that said, let's get right into it. So, what's up with the whole men's rights movement? Just looking up men's movement on Wikipedia yields a tree of ideologies on the subject of men. There's the men's rights movement, the men's liberation movement, the mythopoetic men's movement, masculinism, and the pro-feminist men's movement. To be honest, even I was pretty confused about who all these groups are and what they all stand for. But I did some research, and I'll go ahead and share with you what I've learned. You're welcome. The ultimate takeaway from all of these different men's rights movements springing up is that a lot of men have agreed that they're not properly served by the current social system, and there needs to be a change. What they disagree on is where exactly the problem arises and what to do about it. What might surprise you is that the majority of these groups are not exclusively or explicitly anti-feminist. I couldn't find a whole lot about the mythopoetic men's movement, and it seems like they're a kind of fringe movement, kind of. In fact, it didn't really seem like a movement so much as a group of like-minded individuals. They seem to be focused on a return to traditional male roles in society, and they feel that men don't have enough opportunities to learn from other men in this day and age. It seems like they think that the feminist movement contributed a little bit to this, but as I mentioned, they're not explicitly anti-feminist. Masculinism also seemed like less of an actual movement to me, and more like just a term that's used to describe an ideology. Just as feminism fights for equal status for women in areas where they feel they're underserved, masculinists do the same, but regarding men's issues. For example, they argue that men should not be targeted by mandatory draft regulations in times of war, when women are exempt. They also focus on how men are often shafted when it comes to divorce, alimony, child custody, and those kinds of issues. All of these are valid gender inequalities that actually do need more attention. Again, these guys don't seem to have any problem with feminists. They're just fighting their own side of the gender inequality cause. Pro-feminists seem to be just feminists, but male feminists. Or more precisely, non-female feminist allies. In other words, they fight for the same causes as feminists: equal pay, birth control, end to domestic violence, etc., etc. Some just don't feel it appropriate to call themselves feminists because they're not women. Others want to distance themselves from feminism a bit to prevent men from overshadowing the female leaders or dominating the movement in any way, which is another commendable gesture. But then we get into the men's liberation and men's rights movement. And these two groups seem to be a little bit skewed. Well, I mean, they seem to be kind of interlinked. People often interchange the titles, but they seem to have different origins. The men's liberation movement, as far as I've learned, it began as a sect of feminism. So basically, like the masculinists, they fought for equality for men with the support of the feminists. Unfortunately, there was some kind of divide that occurred somewhere down the line, and essentially the movement split into two factions. One of them was the pro-feminists, who still believed in the tenets of feminism and still fought for male rights. The other group became the men's rights movement. And now these are the guys that you probably heard about. They're the ones behind the Manosphere, which is now this trending thing in internet circles and forums and such. They also are the ones who created and, well, at least they support Gamergate, the Red Pill, Manonism, and things like that. They're essentially the backlash of feminism. Men who got fed up by the way that feminists seem to target them, and they believe that feminists in particular are to blame for the ways in which men are underserved by society, since now there's more of a female focus when it comes to equal rights. The movement has recently exploded all over the internet, causing a lot of controversy and getting a lot of feminists very upset. So, what is to be learned from all of this? I'll go ahead and add a little disclaimer here that I am by no means an expert on gender studies. All of the research that I did here is pretty surface level. I didn't go too deep into it. I didn't really have time to really do all that much research. And I don't really think that it's that important to figure out the exact distinctions about all these different groups, at least not for my intents and purposes. I'm really just a storyteller and a critic. I've got a good idea about what's going on in the world, so I try to be a kind of third party that can bring people together. I going to go ahead and put it out there that I'm not perfect, and I don't claim to be perfect. So if I say anything that that anybody might take offense to, or you think is just blatantly wrong, then absolutely feel free to send me an email, leave me a comment, send me a tweet, whatever. Let me know whatever it is that you are feel, or if you feel like I got something wrong or whatever. Let me know, and you know. I definitely want to be able to start a conversation, because I really want to learn from you guys as well. But that said, let's first take a look at what's wrong with the men's rights movement. Feminists have a right to be angry at the Red Pillars. The men's rights movement, as I mentioned before, is a backlash movement. What that essentially means is that the movement itself is in direct opposition to the feminist movement. Or, in other words, the movement was created in an attempt to stifle the progress of the feminist movement. Feminists say that women are paid less than men for the same work. And the men's rights activists argue the opposite. Feminists argue that many reports of rape and domestic violence are not taken seriously in, like, courts and society and so forth. And then the men's rights activists argue that a lot of women lie about being raped, and they are not properly punished for that. Feminists argue that women are too often verbally and sexually harassed by men. And then the men's rights activists argue that if a woman were to be too forward with a man, then that's no problem. But if a man is too forward with a woman, then he's attacked and even arrested. And with all this said, it's no wonder that feminists are so done with the whole men's rights thing. And now, between the two movements, one is shouting misogyny, the other is shouting misandry. Tomatoes, tomatoes. Ultimately, zero progress is made, which, to me, I feel it actually benefits the men's rights side, since all they really want to do is throw a wrench into the gear that is feminism. But, frankly, it kind of sucks, because, I mean, obviously, I identify as a feminist, so I know that feminists are doing really good work, really important work. And to say that women are not mistreated in our society, frankly, requires a level of ignorance that is pretty incalculable. I feel like it's silly for me to even try to list out the benefits of feminism since they're so numerous. It simply goes without saying that we need feminism. It's really obvious to me. And I mean, if a woman cannot walk down a city street without being harassed or just bothered by men, and men can walk down whatever street he wants without the same fear of harassment, then boom, there you go. That's gender inequality. That alone proves that feminism is important and is necessary. You know, that just that one thing is like already feminism is necessary. And that's just surface level stuff here. So yeah, feminism is important. That to me is like a given. But at the same time, let's look at the flip side of the coin. I think it's important to see the double standard here. It's a problem that if a man actually just gives a woman a random compliment on the street, a lot of women get offended and even see it as an excuse to lash out at him. Now, obviously, street harassment for a man is not the same as it is for a woman, not by any stretch of the imagination. And it's silly to even try to compare the two. In fact, the whole reason women are so closed off when it comes to these kinds of situations is because men so often have these skeezy lines that they give to women, and like, because women have to deal with street harassment all of the time, you know, anytime a man approaches them, they're immediately going to be a little hesitant and closed off to that. And frankly, they're right. You know, like who can blame women for that? If women weren't harassed all the time by men, then maybe they would be a little bit more open to being complimented on the street. But since guys generally aren't harassed on a daily basis, as women are, they don't have to think about those kinds of things. And that's a problem because guys just need to be more aware of how different their lives are to women's. But another big problem on the other side of things is how a lot of women handle men who complain about this whole double standard. Feminists are often quick to jump down guys' throats and call them ignorant, arrogant, or just plain stupid. But all this does is either silence men completely or make them even more hostile towards feminists. As I said before, feminists have a right to be upset with the men's rights activists. They essentially spit in the face of feminism. However, part of the reason that the men's rights movement started in the first place is because a lot of men felt that they weren't being respected by women. Sure, men have privileges, societal privileges that women just don't have, that women must fight for on a daily basis. And a lot of the reasons why women have these problems is because of male behavior. But the solution is not to point at men and say, "You're what's wrong with the world." I'm not saying that all feminists do it, but I've had women talk to me that way, and it doesn't really make me want to give a shit about feminism. In my opinion, this feeds into one of the main reasons why we should have a men's movement: the misconception that men are the stronger sex. Sure, men are taught to be strong, to shun any emotion, to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, to grow a pair, to be tough, to be a man. But this is just another form of gender discrimination. I don't consider myself to be any stronger than women. Sure, I might be physically stronger, just based on genetics, but what does that really matter in our day and age? We don't live in a hunter-gatherer society anymore. We can move on from the traditional gender roles. It made sense then, but it doesn't anymore. Why, when women are faced with gender discrimination, are they allowed to cry foul, but if a man faces discrimination, he's told to suck it up? Feminism, though its goal is gender equality, naturally focuses on discrimination against women. I mean, it's called feminism for a reason. We can't expect women to stand up for men's rights, and men shouldn't be taking any kind of lead when it comes to the feminist movement. As allies, men should work to help elevate the women who organize the movement, but they should take a step back and let women do their thing. So this, in the same way, we can't expect women to spearhead the men's rights movement. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. But when men start to talk about these things and, like, try to start their own movement and try to bring equality for themselves, women just kind of laugh at them. And it's like, what's that about? So basically, feminism's not really a place to advocate for male equality. Although, at the same time, I don't feel like we need a whole other movement. If anything, we can just simply form a gender equality movement and just call it that. But something needs to change because men have issues, and we need to be able to talk about them in a safe environment. And if we're constantly being guilted and called assholes or ignorant or just simply told to man up all the time, then not a whole lot of progress is going to get made. I mean, we can say hypothetically, just hypothetically speaking, that if we say there are 50 different ways that women are underserved by society, this is a made-up number, so nobody gets stuck on it. So there are 50 ways that women are underserved by society, and there are just 10 ways in which men are underserved. Again, made-up numbers. even though women are clearly more disadvantaged because they've got 50 different problems to worry about, it's not really a valid reason to completely ignore the 10 ways in which men are disadvantaged. You know, we can't say, like, oh, well, let's fix the 50 issues that women deal with, but men, we'll get around to that. You know, even if we just unpack 5 different privileges that that men have over women to every 1 privilege that women have over men, then at least both sides are being considered. So I'm not saying that, you know, we should look at everything equally, because, you know, we're not necessarily, I guess equality is a bad word to say because, the sexes aren't equal. And I think that's one of the things that anti-feminists say a lot, that, feminists seem to argue that the sexes are equal or should be equal. We shouldn't necessarily be looking for equality. We should be looking for fairness. And I think a lot of people understand the difference there. So women are significantly more disadvantaged than men are. If we looked at them equally, then we would say, like, okay, well, for every 1 problem that women have, let's fix 1 problem that men have too. And we don't necessarily have to do that. That's not even what I'm saying that we should do. We should, like, you know, really focus on women's issues because they're really far behind in our society. But at the same time, you know, let's also give some consideration to the other side of, like, how men are, how men could use some help too. And that, to me, is fair. We can find a fair balance between, you know, lifting up women and also considering how men could benefit as well. And as I said before, women have no reason to fight for male rights. You know, why should they? it's up to men to take the helm to fight for their own rights. But if women can't take them seriously and they just call them whiny sissy boys every time they complain about their problems, then, well, I mean, we could just add that to the list of disadvantages that men have. So, all that being said, what should men be fighting for? And how are these issues actually important to women? Well, what I feel is a primary issue, and one that you'll hear a lot, that I'll talk about a lot on this podcast, is in regards to male upbringing. Men, as I touched on earlier, are taught to be masculine. Well, what is masculine? Strong, brave, protective, emotionless, aggressive. These are all specific ideals that we instill in our young men. Men have no choice to perhaps be passionate, emotional, sensitive, caring, nurturing. We can't do that. We're not supposed to be those things. Men are taught to fight. They're taught to fight for women, fight other men, fight for their beliefs, fight for their country, and just to fight in general. But what happens to men who are pacifists? Well, as a male pacifist, I can answer that question for you. We're humiliated. We're, at the very least, we're given a lot of side eye. And if feminists are going to complain about street harassment, then I should be able to complain about the harassment that I get from other men for being perceived as weak. Men are taught to worship the female body, and I don't use the term worship lightly. Men are taught, just the same as women, to strive for an ideal of beauty. Except women are expected to emulate it, and men are expected to marry a woman who has it. We talk about the male sex drive as being disproportionately higher than that of a woman, and I used to believe that, but now I'm pretty sure that that's just a myth that we've all just kind of blindly fallen for. And if you really think about it, men are taught to be addicted to the female body. I mean, so are women. everybody is. And feminists talk about the negative impact that the oversaturation of sexiness has on the female body. But, I mean, you want to look at the other side of the story. Like, men are affected by these images just as much as women are. Except men are taught to see the female body as this beautiful, special, sacred, and even holy object. It's this glorious thing that we really need to acquire for status. So, let's take another analogy. Let's think about diamonds for a minute. What is a diamond? A diamond is a precious stone. It's a stone. It's a rock. It's literally a rock. That's what it is. And what can you do with a rock? Not a whole lot. It's a rock. You can look at it, or you can throw it, and that's pretty much the extent of its value. It has no inherent value other than being looked at or thrown. But we as a society, we place value on this rock. People spend millions upon millions of dollars for these rocks. And people lie, cheat, and steal, and kill for these rocks. People work long hours in harsh and dangerous conditions to find these rocks. And for what? So we can give it to somebody that we love as a sign of marriage? I mean, it's like, oh, look, I found this pretty rock for you. Now we can get married. Well, it's not even I found this rock. I picked it up at the store and paid a lot of money for it. Yay, now we can get married. And despite all of this, we're still convinced that diamonds have some sort of special significance to them. So much so that we continue to die trying to dig them up and spend millions of dollars to buy them. But the only thing that diamonds really have going for them is that they're incredibly rare. But if we look at women, on the other hand, women make up half of the population. They're everywhere. So now you take that same analogy, you look at men who grow up looking at women as some kind of precious object, like a diamond. And so, like, these guys are growing up thinking that this precious stone that they're supposed to kill for or spend millions of dollars for, but they're not... Women aren't incredibly rare. They're just walking down the street everywhere. So, like, now guys are... you know, walking down the street, and they see every other person is this diamond that they're supposed to, like, you know, kill themselves over. So now you have, like, this equation equals an existential crisis. That is the solution to that equation. It's like, that's what happens. Men are taught to obsess over women as, you know, as these precious stones. And, you know, now they're all fucked up in the head because, like, what are we supposed to do when we see, like, a bunch of women, like, walking down the street? My point here is that the way men are currently raised, we're faced with an inherent contradiction. Basically, a carrot is dangled on a string in front of us, and we're made to run on our hamster wheel to try to catch it. And obviously, this is no fault of women. Women are the carrot in this analogy. You know, they're not only are they not at fault, they're not even living entities that are capable of choice. They're literally tied up and dangled in front of men as bait. So yeah, women are getting the shorter end of the stick, but neither sex is really benefiting from the scenario. We're all kind of slaves to the system. And feminists often say that men don't want to fight against the patriarchy because they benefit from it. And, you know, given all this, I have to say that that's not, like, it to me, it doesn't seem like that's the case at all. You know, men don't really benefit from the patriarchy. Yes, we have a lot of power in terms of, like, you know, high roles in government and all these things, but just because of that doesn't automatically mean we are, you know, orchestrating this whole, like, what we think about the world and everything. We're just as much slaves to this whole system as women are. And on top of that, men are intimidated by women, for the most part. We don't understand women at all, and we lack the tools to do so. A lot of guys know about women is that everything that they do know is wrong, and that's pretty much where we stand in that regard. So, in order to end the patriarchal system, we need to embrace both male and female voices. We absolutely need men to join this gender equality movement to bring us where we need to be as a society. Feminists say that they want men to be involved, and yet a lot of them just kind of scoff at men for voicing their opinions. On the same token, men need to stop getting angry at feminists and continue making their voices heard about how they're discriminated against because of their gender. We need to stop blaming feminists for our problems because they certainly aren't the ones causing them. And so, my requests of you are, if you're a man, cut yourself off from the men's rights movement. Though they do make some good arguments about how men are discriminated against, it's usually covered with a pretty significant veil of hate and sexism. If you're a man, I'd say educate yourself on men's issues as well as women's issues, because the more you know. The better educated you are, the more people will take you seriously, basically. So stop blaming feminists for your problems. Feminists are not to blame for putting men where they are. It's simply that women are making progress and men are just lagging behind them. We simply need to catch up. Awareness is the first step to progress. And as for women, if you are not already a feminist, then become one. And that goes for the guys as well. If you have problems with the feminist movement, it's probably because you're misinformed or you're too focused on one particular issue where you disagree with most feminists. Chances are you're probably really closely aligned with a lot of feminist ideologies. Basically, all feminists, the link that brings all feminists together is that they want women to be not discriminated against. And that's all feminism is. Like, that's it. So unless you're an asshole, then you're probably a feminist. Just throwing that out there. Because not every feminist is the same, and feminism has been around for a long time, so it's taken a lot of different shapes. So I would say for everyone, do some research about feminism, especially if you consider yourself to be not a feminist. Like, look into that, because I'm pretty sure you'll probably find something that you do like about the movement, and find some things that you agree on. And I mean, like, if anything, it will cause you to start some discussion about these things. And dialogue is the second step to progress. And after all, feminism should be about elevating women, not about bringing down men. But both of the sexes need to be raised up, since both are in a pretty bad place. We need to get rid of this whole idea of all these stereotypes that we hold about the sexes and start to move into the 21st century. People should be allowed to be who they want to be. If a man wants to forgo a corporate job for a lesser paying teaching gig, then he should be able to. If a woman decides that she doesn't want to have kids and instead start her own business, then she should be able to do that too. The feminist movement, nor the male equivalent, is not trying to tell people that they should be doing anything in particular. It's not trying to tell people what they should and should not want. It's all about empowering people to make their own decisions, and that's the extent of it. All right, well, that's a lot to get off my chest, but I think that was the goal of this episode, was just to kind of go through and talk about, I guess, where I stand on all of these issues so you guys have some context. But that's pretty much it for this episode of Romeo And. As always, if you want to have your story featured on this podcast, then send me a message via email, contact@stsaint.com, or give me a call at 516-514-7878. Also, be sure to follow me on social media, like Romeo And on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo And are published every 2 weeks, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcaster or the podcatcher of your choice. We are now on iTunes and Stitcher as of this episode. Yay! So you guys can go to those places, and even if you don't subscribe, even if you don't like us on Facebook and everything, like, if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and Stitcher and give us a 5-star rating. See, like, there's literally nothing more valuable for the show than for you to just give us a good rating. Like, if we get a bunch of good ratings, then, like, that's gonna boost us up so much, and, like, it's gonna increase our audience, and it's just going to make this such a greater experience for everyone involved. So I encourage you all to go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a good review, especially if you enjoyed this episode or if you've enjoyed the podcast thus far. But that's it for this episode. As I said, thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.